From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. It's always a pleasure to have Clint Van Zandt on the show. You'll know Clint as a former FBI agent, safety expert, author, analyst, you name it. He's done it all. And he sent out an article the other day, and he's always kind enough to send them to me, talking about why travel to Mexico can be dangerous to your health. Well, we all know in the media what, you know, we've been watching lately with the tragedy in Japan and Libya and all this nonsense. In fact, Charlie Sheen taking up the airwaves for so long. We don't hear a lot about Mexico and the safety of Mexico. And I go back to the early days of me interviewing Clinton and he and I doing shows about Natalie Holloway and the thoughts of your child going on a trip. A school trip, spring break, call it what you want, and Aruba and all that. And I thought, what a perfect time to bring Clint on the show and talk about Mexico and the safety of Mexico. Hi, Clint. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Dana. Good to be with you again. Thanks for having me.
You know, but just before we get started into the article, I want to ask you your thoughts on finally we're hearing about the FBI heading off to Peru to analyze their forensic experts, analyze Joran van der Slot's computer hard drive, I'm assuming. Your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, my initial thought, Dana, was really, why wait this long? I mean, we know how long van der Sloot's been in custody in Peru. We know that the computer was an issue from day one. I mean, allegedly the reason he committed murder was he caught that young woman, quote-unquote, snooping into his computer, using it to find a relationship between he and Natalie Holloway. And based upon that, which, you know, initially we thought to be maybe a Google search or something, that he beat her to death, allegedly with a ball bat or whatever he may have used on her. Number one, I think he's exactly where he belongs. Mm-hmm. And number two, I would, you know, if I were in a position, I would tell the U.S. government and the Aruban government, you know, don't do anything to try to extradite this guy or do anything. Let him stay right there. Let him fall under Peruvian justice and let them have their way with him. Now, it brings the question, though, the investigative aspect. You know, should the FBI be in Peru looking at the laptop? Well, of course they should. And when I thought it out a little bit more, Dana, I thought, you know, really, the number one, it's between, you know, governments, it's between agencies, it's between state departments, it's between countries. So those wheels move slowly. And the reality is the FBI did not have to be in that big of a hurry. In essence, the computer was in evidence, it was in storage, it wasn't going anyplace, it wasn't going to be altered or changed. My assumption would have been that the Peruvian government, the first thing you and I know that you do whenever you start to look at any type of hard drive is you make a mirror image of it to make sure that nothing can be lost. And I'm sure the Peruvians are smart enough to do that. And I guess the second point is that the evidence is going nowhere and van der Sloot's going nowhere. He's already indicted in the United States for mail fraud and wire fraud and other things, so we have the instruments to bring him back and to prosecute him in the United States, should we ever want to do that. I think what the computer might help us to do is answer the question of what really happened to Natalie Holloway. And as much as, you know, Beth, who's a friend of mine, and others want to know the answer to what happened to their child, their daughter, their friend, I think the FBI is moving slowly because they want to get it right. If there's something there, you know, Lord knows they don't want to contaminate an Aruban murder investigation. So, you know, having the benefit of 2020 hindsight, I can understand why they are moving or appear to have moved slow in this, because the evidence is not going away And as far as we know, Vandersloot's not going away.
Yeah, well said. That's true. And getting to your article, you talk about, and I had to think about it a little bit because we have kids pretty much the same age, and you talk about your younger son in college and a spring break, and then you preface Natalie Holloway a little bit. Let's talk about the safety aspect of Mexico, police officers being killed, drug cartels, date rape drugs. You go back to Andrew Luster, the infamous rapist who hid down there, and Dog the Bounty Hunter going to look for him. But you know what? We don't hear a lot about Mexico, at least that we should hear about, and just how dangerous it is there.
Well, you know, it's true. In spring break, you know, obviously speaking for the United States, there's about 5.5 million college students that are going on spring break. Now, you know, I was talking about this on television the other day, and I said it was interesting. I mean, I date myself here, but whenever I went on spring break, I got a job because I needed the money to go to college. So instead of going off to exotic places, I found some place to work for a week or two, pick up some extra money so I could keep going in school. But I realize times are different.
Yep.
I mean, my kids live different than I do, and they went on spring break to interesting places, and they didn't wind up in a steel mill like I did. But I think part of the challenge is, of that 5.5 million plus or minus American college students, normally at least 100,000 will find their way south of the border. They'll head down to Mexico again. Now, we all know that about 10% of the population of Mexico, to begin with, is in the United States, both legal and illegal. So it's interesting that that population wants to leave their country and wants to come, you know, north of the border instead. But from the safety standpoint, I think is the challenge. You know, a friend of mine is a former Army four-star general by the name of Barry McCaffrey. He's a former drug czar in the United States. Just a brilliant guy, a wonderful combat veteran, almost killed in combat multiple times in Vietnam and other places. But long story short, as the drug czar and going south of the border as much as he does to do studies, he said that just two of the Mexican drug cartels have a little over 100,000 soldiers, so to speak, within their organization. Well, the standing Mexican army is only a little bit more than 110,000. So he makes the valid point that within 10 years, if just two or more of the drug cartels quit fighting and smoke a peace pipe, and they're, in that case, maybe a crack pipe, but smoke a peace pipe together, get together, that they can outnumber the standing Mexican army, notwithstanding how many police, unfortunately, and members of the military are already under the influence of the drug cartels. So when we, you know, as a college student or as an adult or anybody else, when you go down to Mexico, you've got to realize that the murder rate has doubled in the last couple of years. Dana, if you want to get somebody killed in Mexico, if I want to put a hit out on somebody, yeah, I can do it for $100.
Yeah.
I can say, you know what, I don't like that person. I can approach somebody in one of the cartels, and for $100, they will knock that person off. If I want somebody in the cartel to come north of the border in the United States, the rate goes up between $500 and $1,000. So there are people in Mexico, in the cartels and others, that will commit these terrible type of offenses, and they will do it so cheaply. And as an American student, I mean, there are hundreds of Americans that are in jail for minor drug offenses all over the world, about 2,000 in all honesty right at this point, Americans who are sitting in some third world jail, and these are not pleasant places because as an FBI agent, I've been in them, and I, you know, you want to get out as quick as you get in. But the reality is you can get picked up for very, very minor offenses, just a little bit of pot or something else. They can put you in jail, Dana, and you can sit there, and they can either ask terrible physical things of you and force you to do things. They can demand money. They can make your parents and family pay ransom. You get in certain jails, and you're not fed unless your family provides money to provide you food. Otherwise, you starve in the jail. These are the conditions that, you know, when we're 18, 19, 21 years old, we think we're bulletproof. Well, you get into a third world country, and all of a sudden you realize what living in America or living in Canada, the freedoms you have and the protections you have, those all go out the window And it's probably one of the scariest places in the world that you could be. And you could wind up in a situation like that in jail, notwithstanding a victim of a crime, so easy.
Clint Van Zandt's here. Make sure and check out his webpage at livesecure.org. When we see Mexico in the media, we see the resorts, we see the beaches and the fancy atmosphere, so to speak, and you look at the dollar value, it's cheap to go there, but the dangers itself, and we talk about law enforcement, and we hear about them being killed off, decapitated. They can't keep police chiefs for more than a week, but there's so much corruption down there. How does the reaction of the American government, how do you see the reaction of the American government to protecting its citizens? Because so many do cross into Mexico, yet, we don't hear much about it.
Well, we had two federal agents gunned down just about 2 weeks ago that were down south of the border involved in an investigation.
Yep.
And they were both shot to pieces with automatic weapons by the drug cartel in their vehicle as they were driving along. So, I mean, if they will take on federal agents, they'll literally take on anybody. But, you know, let's balance this, too. I mean, I know you've got listeners sitting there right now saying, that's not true. I've been down to Mexico. I've had fun. Well, Dana, so have I.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not had my pocket picked. I've not been held up or anything like that either. But you really have to be careful where you go. For college students, I'd say, you know, if you choose to go down there, you know, go to a resort that's well-known. Go to a place that, you know, that you pay a few bucks for, but it's a nice place. Stay in the immediate area of the resort. And as you know, in my article, I had a number of other tips to do. But if you're careful of where you go, if you're careful of your surroundings, I mean, you can greatly limit your chance of being a victim. It's just, unfortunately, there are a lot of people that head south and realize that statistically, like the average male on spring break will speak of having at least 15 alcoholic drinks a day. The average young woman will speak about having 10 alcoholic drinks a day. That's a lot of booze, especially if you're not used to doing it. So right away, you make yourself vulnerable. And Dana, just like when I was in Aruba going to Carlos and Kelly's, the last bar that Natalie Holloway was in, and I kind of leaned up against a wall and looked around, and you could pick out the predators that are there, that are in the bar, that are circling, that are looking for the victims that are going to be easy, that are intoxicated, that don't have somebody with them, looking after them, that when they walk out of the bar, they can be preyed upon. And in second and third world countries, that happens night after night. And if you survive either a physical assault or robbery or something like that, and you go to the police, most of the time they're going to say, gee, that's terrible. We'll arrest the usual suspects, but you're going to have to stay around a week or two longer. Then you'll have to fly back and forth two or three times to testify. Maybe the best thing you can do, young American, is get on the plane or the boat and head back to America and be lucky you're still alive. And all that does is tell the predators it's open season on Americans, and in some areas and in some places, they just continue to victimize people over and over again.
Yeah, Clint Van Zandt's here. We're talking about safety and Mexico, and in Clint's article, he talks about some common sense and preparation tips, 10 factors, and let's go over some of them, Clint. One that I found very interesting, and a lot of people don't think about, is ensuring that someone at home has all your travel and contact information, including a copy of your passport and credit cards, etc. Let's talk about that.
Sure. It is so easy to have your passport stolen, your credit card stolen. When you leave, you want somebody to know where you can be found. You want them to know that, you know, I'm going to be at the XYZ hotel, and here's the city, and here's the phone number for the hotel. And when you get down there, you know, again, if you're a college student, if you're a young person, you know, call back, check in. I mean, I always wanted my kids to check in. Let me know where you're at. I mean, I'm not going to be sitting over their shoulders. They were big boys and girls. But I wanted to know if something happened, how I can find them. And if your passport is lost or stolen, or your credit cards are lost and stolen, You want somebody, number one, to be able to go to the State Department and help starting to get a replacement passport. If you say, well, gee, I don't remember my passport number, that just takes that much longer. Mm-hmm. And if your credit cards are lost or stolen, you want somebody who can make that call. If you can't make it yourself, make that call, shut that credit card down, number one, so it can't be used, and number two, to get you some type of replacement. And the easiest thing is, in all honesty, take those credit cards, passports, lay them on top of a copying machine, run off a copy, leave a copy at home with a family member, take a copy with you, and if something happens to those documents, you've got that information right there. And Dana, that's not just traveling in Mexico. That's anywhere you are. You ought to have backup copies of numbers and phone numbers, because if you don't, you and I have seen enough people when their wallets have been stolen, their purses have been stolen, they get that deer in the headlight look when you say, how many credit cards did you have in your purse? Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, if it's my wife, she's got about 6 or 8, a couple of them that she hasn't used in a year or two, but they're still there. Yep. That she may have forgotten about. Well, I guarantee you the bad guys don't forget about it, and they're using those cards very quickly until you call the company and say, it's been stolen, stop it.
Your cell phone. A lot of people take it for granted that you take it with you. It's going to work wherever you go, but that's not always true.
That's not always true. There are phones, if you have multiple bands, you may work in various foreign countries and areas. But, it was interesting. I mean, traveling in and out of Japan one time. I mean, there I had a phone that was obviously the company that made it. It was made in Japan, and the bands that I had didn't work in Japan. The cell phone wouldn't work there. Well, I travel internationally a lot,
yep.
And every time before I do, even though I've got a 4-band, multi-band iPhone, I stop by my cell phone company, and I say, number one, will it work there? And, number two, I say, what discount programs do you have that, because you wind up paying $2-3 a minute, sometimes you can get a discount program if you just ask for it. I mean, every time I'm gone overseas for about 2 weeks, I come back and my cell phone bill is about $300 or $400. Mm-hmm. And you don't realize every minute, cha-ching, cha-ching. So number one, know how much it's going to cost. Number two, make sure that phone will work, and realize that, if you're in some second or third world country, dialing 911 is not going to do you much good down there.
Absolutely. Using stairwells and elevators by yourself, again, something that people don't think about, but just that's so dangerous. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, many times predators, again, if it's somebody looking for a sexual assault, if it's somebody looking to rob you, what they want to do is cut you out of the herd. They want to. It's just like a lion looking at a herd of gazelles that's running across the plains of Africa. That lion is sitting there, and he's looking at him, and he's trying to pick out what's the slower one, which one has been injured, or which one is running a little bit away from the pack so I can cut it out of the pack and take it down. Well, human predators do the same thing. They look for that. And if we separate ourselves from where you can be seen, it's just like in any city, I talk to people and lecture and say, if it's nighttime, you're in a building or an apartment complex or something, the doors are open, anybody can come in and out, you're standing there waiting for an elevator, you're by yourself, it's 2 a.m. in the morning, somebody walks up and there's just something in you that says, I don't care what the what the guy's race or color or religion or anything else is, if there's just something within you that has been, bred in us over the years, that survival instinct, if there's something that says, I don't like the idea necessarily of being alone with this guy, why would you be politically correct? Get on an elevator, let the doors close, and be inside of a soundproof container with someone that you've questioned who they are in the first place. And the easiest thing to do is say, hey, I'm waiting for my girlfriend, I'm waiting for my boyfriend, my husband's just down the hall, you go ahead and I'll catch the next one up, and let that person go. Well, that's an elevator, but the same thing with the stairs. If somebody sees you and you go into that stairwell, realize that once you get in there, those fireproof doors close again, you are there, and that's where a silent scream takes place, because nobody's going to hear you yell if you're by yourself.
You know, we talked about Natalie Holloway, and tip number six is something that just goes through my mind when I think about that poor gal, is drinking from a sealed container. Make sure you do that. Make sure you get your drink from a bartender, because there's a lot of predators out there are going to put something in your drink.
When I was in Aruba, I was talking to some of the cops down there at the time Natalie Holloway disappeared, and they told me right up front, for $5 or $10, you can go to a bartender, tell him, I want you to put a Rufinol, I want you to put a date rape drug in this drink. He will put it in the drink. You can turn it around and give it to whoever you want to give it to. And all of a sudden, that person is not just under the influence of alcohol, but now they're under the influence of some type of date rape narcotic drug that is going to put you in a terrible situation. I mean, to this day, I still think in my mind that that's what happened to Natalie Holloway, notwithstanding she had been drinking that afternoon of her own volition anyway, and she wasn't used to drinking. But I think when she was in Carlos and Charlie's or some bar before she got there, I think that somebody probably slipped her a date rape drug. I think she left that place not only under the influence of alcohol, but under the influence of Rufinol. And I think that that just made her an easy victim for whatever happened right afterwards. And again, if you're there, be careful of an open glass where somebody else gets, some stranger goes and gets you a drink and says, here, I got this for you. I mean, if you're going to drink a can of beer. And if you have a glass, if you have a drink of something and you're sitting at a bar, do the old sit there with your hand over the top of the glass. If you turn around to dance or go to the restroom and come back again, don't drink that same drink. Get a fresh drink, because there's a good chance somebody could put something in it again. What are the chances is going to happen? I don't know. Let's say 5%. Let's say at most it's 5%. I want that 5% going for my kids, that won't be done to make them a victim of somebody else.
And let's finish up with probably one of the most important ones, number 10. And you say, remember Spider-Man, and Spidey had that sixth sense, and that is so important.
He did. And again, it's like I was talking about the elevator. When something doesn't look right, when it doesn't feel right, when that itch comes on the back of your head, or that hair comes up in the back of your neck and says, this doesn't feel good, trust that influence, feeling. That's something that's inbred in us that we've become politically correct over the years, and we don't necessarily respond to that. Dana, that's something that a good cop has always had.
Yep.
He or she says, this situation isn't good. I'm going to circle the block. I'm going to go back and look at it again. We need to do that. And one more, Dana, one more tip is, one of my favorite movies years ago was the old movie Top Gun.
Yep.
And in that, a fighter movie, guys flying planes off of aircraft carriers, we know that the hero in that movie told us, he said the one thing he learned was to never leave your wingman. And I will remember that from the first time I saw that movie until today and every time afterwards. And it doesn't just go for flying. It goes for when you're traveling, when you're on vacation, something else. You should always have at least one wingman, one person, one partner who's with you. For men or women, best case scenario is to travel in threes. Because if something happens to you, you've got one person to stay with you, you've got one person to run for help, and the bad guys then have to say, who am I going to go after, or maybe I better leave because one person's going to go to get the cops. But again, I think that's where Natalie Holloway put herself in a situation that I believe led to her demise, was that she went off on her own, she left her wingman, she left her friends there, and she became a victim afterwards. Again, never leave your wingman. And it's not just somebody leaving you. Realize you have a responsibility to another person to be with them. And, I would almost make them fight me before I let them go on their own. Because afterwards, you've got to believe what Natalie Holloway's friends still feel today when they saw her get into that vehicle with those three guys and got out and drive away, when they're saying, stay with us, and Natalie's saying, no, I'm going to go with them. Well, was she under the influence? Was that her talking? Was that the booze, the drugs talking? And I would have hated to have been one of those friends to see her go off, and even today, every day have to think, I wish I would have stayed with her, I wish I wouldn't have let her go. We don't want to go through those wish I would have done something different, because that doesn't change things. What changes things is standing with your friend and making sure they don't get in a dangerous situation.
Well said. Clint's website is livesecure.org. Always a pleasure, sir. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Dana. Bye now. Be safe.
Bye-bye. That's Clint Van Zandt, and when I saw the article about being safe in Mexico and student, some spring break trips there, I couldn't help but think about the Holloway case, and let's hope that someday the Holloway family will get some answers and that your family will stay safe. We're going to take a break here on Scared Monkeys Radio, and we're going to come back with the goddess of blogs, Blink, from Blink on Crime, and we're going to talk about what's been going on there. This is the Dana Pretzer Show. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Our sister blog, blinkoncrime.com, is run by the goddess of all blogs, Blink, and it's always a pleasure to have her on the show. Good evening, ma'am.
Good evening, Dana. How are you?
I am fine. And let's start out just for a minute to remember a monkey that we lost the other day. And, I get a little choked up because when you talk about a kind soul, this gal was a kind soul. I can remember, of course, never meeting face-to-face, but one of the nice things about doing something like this is you correspond electronically, email or whatever, or on the blog, and I always had nice comments from this monkey, and sadly, she lost her life, and I just want to get you to comment, because you posted something very nice on the front page, and I thought I would just have you talk about her for a second.
Well, I've never met NJ Mom, two sons, who you're referring to, but I certainly hold Clissend and Red in such high esteem, and they were very fond of her.
Yeah.
And I know her from her very generous and kind posts. And I think that because in the blogosphere, when you have somebody that contributes their kindness and their advocacy in that way, even though it's somewhat anonymously, we still really want to acknowledge that. And it was a sad passing, and unfortunately it happened. And I thought it was awesome that Clissend and Red and the monkeys wanted to band together and pay their respects.
Absolutely. It's a family. And when we lose someone, I know when I lost my father and my sister, some of the comments, including from NJ, came to me, and very nice, and we're a very close group, and I just thought I'd talk about that for a little bit. Now, let's get into what we're talking about here. Blinkoncrime.com is your blog page. Just before we start into what you've been covering, Clint Van Zandt and I don't know if you got to hear it or not, we're talking a little bit about Natalie Holloway, and I want to get your thoughts on the FBI finally going to take a look at the hard drive of Joran van der Sloot's computer.
Well, I did hear, and I'm a huge fan of Clint, and I think it was intensely appropriate and responsible to have such an important show, coming around spring break. So congratulations. I think that was a great idea and important for our, not just for our young people, but mostly for our young people, of course, that are on either on spring break or headed to spring break. With regard to the FBI taking a look at Joran van der Sloot's computer, honestly, I'm so over this kid. I don't even know how to see straight.
Yeah.
I don't really believe there's anything that they're going to glean from that that could even be admissible at this point. I don't think he's stupid. I don't think he's gone to the lengths that he has. So while I'm glad at this point, all I care about is that he's behind bars.
Yep.
In some capacity. And even more than that, that Beth and Dave are able to bring Natalie home.
Yep.
And recover her. That's where my heart is, and that's what I would like to see. That's where my focus is.
I couldn't agree more, and in fact, he's not a stupid person. He's a pathological liar. He's a narcissistic accused murderer, but he's not stupid. And whether he has something on the computer or not, I guess we'll find out. I am so over him, too, like you say. Every piece of PR, and he loves it to be in the media.
Right, and that's what gets me. I mean, going back to conversations you and I have had in the past where Beth traveled, to Peru, and so forth, and it was just heartbreaking to see, you know, to see that. I really, the world, and I'm not advocating violence, but the world would be a better place if he was not in it, and I'm sorry for saying that, but it's just true.
Yeah, you're not the only one that has said that and thought that. Let's get back to your page. Say this three times real fast. Bug blunders and botany bias benefit the prosecution. Now, if you can say that three times real fast, I don't know. I'll give you something.
Well done. I changed that title. There was more bees on it. I thought it was too much.
Well, when you're talking about Casey Anthony, there's a lot of BS that goes on with her. But it is interesting because it's a story that has kind of fallen off the radar, so to speak. But there's a lot of information that we need to know about what's up with bug blunders and botany bias.
Well, it's heating up, Dana. The first week of May is the beginning of the jury selection in her trial.
Yep.
If everything goes according to plan, and coming off of a couple days where it took literally 3 days to hear, let's say, 7 motions, is outrageous.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not going to go quickly. It's not lost on the defense that this is being televised, and you know what comes along with that in some situations. But with regard to that article, it's very important because many believe, you know, I know everybody wants to hear that this is a rock-solid case. So do I. But the reality is, it's completely circumstantial.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have a completely circumstantial case, many times, and especially in this situation, it is going to come down to a battle of the experts. It just is. And barring any evidence that I'm not aware of, that's what's really compelling in the article that I put out. And it's not a pleasurable conversation. It's not a pleasurable dialogue.
No.
To look at what we're basically assessing what is a post-mortem interval based on a bug that was either found in the trunk or in the contents of the trash bag in the trunk or with her remains. So, you know, as horrific as it is, you know, to start, because of the fact that she was, you know, Casey Anthony, in my opinion, had a 31-day head start. And with this evidence, and specifically with Dr. Haskell, and I'm talking now about the entomologist.
Right.
I have taken about 3 days studying a subject that I absolutely abhor. I am not a bug person.
No. Especially
like
not
any stretch of the imagination.
Not these kind of bugs, anyway.
What do you mean?
Not these kind of bugs, anyway.
No, I don't. I don't like it.
Yeah.
But I've studied his testimony. I've studied his background. I've studied his work. He is the closest thing you have to a premier witness that can cover not just forensic entomology, but really taphony and forensic investigation and recovery. A lot of people don't know this, but he actually worked as what's called a deaner, and that is in Indiana. He was a autopsy in some of his research, some of his studies. He did autopsies.
Yeah.
And you're not going to find a more complete resume when it comes dealing with all sorts of levels of decomposition and, you know, the really nasty stuff that unfortunately this case is going to come down to. Well, what we found in seeing the recent release of expert testimony in through their depositions and reports, because it was required by Chief Judge Belvin Perry, who, by the way, was reelected February 3rd.
I heard that.
Yes. What we found is that there were vacuum sweepings in the trunk of the car that, for one reason or another, have never been sent to Dr. Haskell for evaluation for any potential entomological evidence. They didn't go to him until December 21st, 2010. So while he had a preliminary report, and the defense expert, who is Dr. Timothy Huntington, had done some preliminary work as well. And by the way, Dr. Huntington was vis-a-vis a fellow of Dr. Haskell,
mm-hmm.
a student. he was on his PhD board. So, you know, awkward.
A little, yeah.
But at any rate, what was found in the vacuumings were, we don't know whose it is yet, so I don't want to get too excited, but I am very excited. A hair with a root bulb and significant entomological evidence. Why do we care, you're asking, right?
Well, I know, but you share that with my audience because it could be a...
we care because it was collected at a separate interval. It was collected
that's right.
when the liner from the trunk of the Pontiac Sunfire was already removed. And within the defense expert, Dr. Huntington's deposition, he specifically says, if there was any evidence of decomposition, and I'm paraphrasing, if there was any evidence of decomposition within this trunk, you would see it, even if she cleaned it. Okay, let's assume she did.
Sure.
Because we know she did.
Yep.
Even if she did, there'd be evidence within, you know, under the trunk liner. He specifically says that. These sweepings show, without getting into specifics, many blowflies, many larvae, many bug samples and specimens that are highly consistent with decomposition.
Mm-hmm.
And in the earlier stages than the later, and I'm trying to be sensitive to how I phrase my comments.
And we're not talking about pizza decomposition, if we remember the case. We're talking about human decomposition.
That's correct. There is... Right now, the way it stands, there is a hair consistent microscopically with Cayley's, with what they're calling a death band, and that is under motion right now. Prosecution is trying to toss it out. There is from the world-renowned Dr. Arpad Voss, who, by the way, Dr. Haskell has studied with at the Body Farm, and their volatile compound that they call it the sniffer. They were able to glean those consistent with, I want to say there's 41 compounds that were consistent with decomposition. And we're talking science here, and I know it's not sometimes as palatable or easy for a lot of us to understand, but again, I say this case is going to come down to that.
So
it is.
So one of the truest things that were spoken from the Anthony family is that when Cindy was on the phone and said that the... trunk smelt like a dead body, that might be one of the true words that she actually spoke in this whole case.
I believe the only time I have heard the raw truth from Cindy Anthony was during the last 911 phone call.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
I believe that in my soul, and I can tell you, I'm a little bit like Rain Man with this case. Rain Girl, whatever.
Rain Girl.
And the statements of the Anthonys, we could spend hours on. They're
sure.
So grossly inconsistent.
Yep.
And in my opinion, I've just recently re-reviewed Cindy Anthony's deposition. There's no question in my mind that they are being coached. I believe that Casey will point the finger at George.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe this girl is going to spend the rest of her natural life in prison or get the death penalty.
And that's
what's going to happen in this case. And you know, I say that with some reservation because there's no such thing as a slam dunk.
No.
In a criminal prosecution, and if anybody says that, they're lying.
No, that's for sure. Blink from Blink on Crime is here. Check out our webpage at blinkoncrime.com. And while we have you here for another 10 minutes or so, I want to get your updates on the Christopher George case, and it's an important one, and you have... an update on your webpage about that.
I do. I'm so attached to the case, I can't tell you. We've talked about it, you and I, a few times. We've worked on it over 18 months. And recently, literally weeks before, well, let me say that a different way. In November, we revisited the case and were able to put together some new information, some new leads that have ultimately resulted in his recovery. And he was recovered February 21st.
Yep.
And he is in the process of positive DNA identification through I'm not positive if he's in the FBI lab in Quantico, Virginia, but I think that's where he is.
Mm-hmm.
For all intents and purposes, he has been identified. His jewelry was found at the scene, clothing items, some things I can't go into.
Right.
But so that's really, barring that, you know, information is what we're looking at. The information that led to his whereabouts came from a tip from somebody that we know in this case, a guy by the name of Adam Veed, who was facing significant time for trafficking. And it's believed that he provided the tip. He's a very close friend of the unofficial chief suspect in the case. Notice I have no problem saying that publicly. A guy by the name of Tyler Waters.
Right.
And he was the last individual to be seen with Christopher George when he was alive. So we are very optimistic that there will be a criminal prosecution in this case. And I can tell you that his family, his mom, his girlfriend, people that cared about him, are very happy that he has been recovered, of course. But they're also, you know, asking questions about, he's literally found within 70 yards of where major searches have occurred before. So they're a little anxious for some answers to the questions that they have, of course. Happy to have recovered their loved one, but more concerned, and concerned might not be the right word, more proactive that there will be a successful prosecution in the case. They want to make sure that that happens.
Well, every family deserves that, and then when you look at the, you know, we can go back to Anthony. We could go back to OJ, and when you look at the forensics, and I still remember seeing the I think the LAPD criminalist was named Fung, and seeing him walking through the blood or handling the blood without gloves on and those little things. And you talk about the vacuumings from the Anthony trunk and this one with Chris George. Will there be forensics involved? And then when you look at the system, and then the defense will come forward and try to challenge those results. And like you say, there's never any guarantee. But God darn it, the family does deserve justice. And I guess in this case, it's one small form of it.
It is, and there have been mistakes in this case, and I'm not talking out of school. This is a conversation that I've had on a couple of levels, law enforcement being one of them. And that should not deny, ultimately, a successful prosecution in the case.
Right.
And there's mistakes that, you know, you're in law enforcement, Dana. People are human beings.
That's right.
No, you can't predict a lot of things you probably wish you could in very many situations. And there is no such thing as a pristine crime scene.
No.
It just doesn't happen.
I've never seen one.
And sometimes, referring to Casey Anthony, sometimes criminals are luckier than smart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
true.
And
that is absolutely what I believe worked to her advantage. This isn't, it's not a perfect system, but our jurisprudence is really the best we have. And it does indicate an adversarial type of gathering, if you will, an outcome, and that's when you get, somebody pointing the finger at, you know, how evidence was handled, and I get that, and I feel that, because it shouldn't come down to that. I know everybody wants to just say, well, this person's guilty, and they did this, and it shouldn't matter. You know, it shouldn't be our fault that, you know, the body decomposed in a swamp and now there's no DNA tying duct tape to them. You know, those kinds of issues.
Sure, yeah.
But it is what it is. And you have to make the best of your case.
Yep.
For the most part, I think law enforcement does a fantastic job. And, you know, not to be off color, but I was discussing a case with one of my very favorite investigators a couple of weeks ago, a mentor of mine, actually, and I was, you know, I was complaining. I was saying, well, this is this, and, you know, I can't be specific. I apologize for that. But, and this happened, and this happened. And he said to me, you know what? You can't un-bleep a case. Because I'm just going to stop you right there.
Yeah.
You can't un-F a case.
Yeah, that's right.
So just realize you have what you have. It is what it is. And you go from there.
And you work with
it's
it.
It's not possible.
Yep.
So we do our best to assist in whatever way that we can. That's just the way it goes. And it's not fair. It's not right. But, as far, like you said, as far as the victims are concerned and their families, they deserve that, and it's the right thing, and it's our job.
It's, yeah, we present the evidence, and we hope for the best. Her website is blinkoncrime.com. We call her the blog goddess of crime. That's the new...
I'll send you that check.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm bringing a psychiatrist on next to talk about Charlie Sheen. I know you're going to be shocked about that. Is he crazy or is he crazy like a fox? We're going to find out in just a minute.
Is that a question?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just going to have a big swig of tiger blood here, take a break, and we'll come back. So
I don't care. That's my answer.
Exactly.
If everybody goes away and doesn't pay any attention to him, you know what he'll do? He'll go to rehab.
Well, they're not going to like it. I recorded the interview a little bit earlier, but I compared some of his ramblings to another guy named Charlie, and he's doing life.
Well, I bet it does his last name's over than M.
Yep.
Because, and I didn't even hear that. You didn't set me up.
Because I think they're both as crazy as each other, so we'll leave
it. Here's the thing.
Yes.
The problem. That man has 4 children.
I know.
And get a grip on reality. I don't care, you know, really, the way you're living your life is completely inappropriate, and that's fine, but when you're involving drugs and you're involving, you know, children who are, you know, ultimately, I see another Anna Nicole Smith coming down this bike.
Absolutely.
If he doesn't get help.
I couldn't agree more. Blink from Blink on Crime, always a pleasure, ma'am.
You too. Take care. Be well, Dana.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I sat down with Dr. Dale Archer, clinical psychiatrist and host of the very popular Dr. Dale Archer Show. You see Dale on Jane Blaise Mitchell, Nancy Grace, all the cable news shows. And we talked about Charlie Sheen, and I'll share that conversation with you right now. Okay, we're back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. A friend of the show, Dr. Dale Archer, clinical psychiatrist, host of the popular Dr. Dale Archer Show. Click on the link in the show notes to get to his webpage. You see him on all the cable news shows talking about all things high-profile cases, you name it. And I know you're going to be shocked when I say I brought Dr. Archer on tonight to talk about Charlie Sheen, but, you know, why not? Dr. Archer, welcome back to the show.
Good to be back. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. You know, you're probably getting sick of being asked about Charlie Sheen, but it's a weird, what's the word I'm looking for here? And this is not a medical diagnosis by any means, because I'm not a doctor, but it's a weird phenomena that we're seeing with Charlie Sheen. He's either crazy or he's crazy like a fox and he's a PR genius. Maybe it's a little bit of both. Your thoughts on all things Charlie Sheen?
Well, Charlie Sheen is certainly the gift that keeps on giving. If you are a commentator who is a psychiatrist and talks about high-profile cases. So, yes, I have been talking about him ever since day one of his latest two-week episode. And the guy is, look, I can't make a diagnosis just by seeing video clips and reading what he writes and... granted, he's a very witty guy, but I got to tell you that the number one thing that jumps out at me here is that this guy's on drugs. This is your brain on drugs, kids. This is why you don't do drugs, because this is how you will turn out. And by his own admission, he's been involved with cocaine for 20-plus years, and oftentimes with long-term abuse of a stimulant like cocaine or methamphetamine, it starts to gradually damage your brain and damage the thinking part of your brain, the logical part of your brain. And, of course, what's left is the pure emotional brain, the reptilian brain, which basically does whatever it wants, says whatever it wants. And I think that's what we're seeing now. Now, you know, you go in a dose of, a healthy dose of narcissism, clearly. He's one of the most narcissistic guys on the planet, and maybe a touch of bipolar disorder, but that's hard to diagnose because in the face of stimulant use, you really can't make that call. And this is what you get. And, you know, it's interesting, if you watch his early rants, they were very witty and funny. I mean, I really laughed out loud for the first 3 or 4 days of this entire debacle. But after that, you could see him deteriorating. And clearly he wasn't sleeping. Clearly his rants ceased to be funny, started to become pathetic, to the point where a lot of it was illogical, not making any sense. And I think right now he's right at the brink of the abyss. I really do. I think that if he doesn't get some sleep primarily, then he could have a full-blown psychosis, which would mandate treatment against as well. So I think he's very, very close to that.
You know, and that's a good question, because we heard a lot about that in the media, treatment against his will, the 5150, they like to call it in California, the assessment, 72-hour hold, whatever you want to call it. Can there actually be something done for a person, Charlie Sheen aside, in 72 hours? Isn't the old adage, you have to want to be helped to get help, true, or am I stretching that a bit?
Yeah, that's not completely true, and, you know, the 5150 is the California version of essentially what we call an order of protective custody, and that basically means that, look, this is a person who is one of three criteria. They're either suicidal, homicidal, or gravely disabled. So danger to self, danger to others, or they're so disabled they can't take care of themselves. Clearly, Charlie Sheen, as of now, does not meet any of those criteria. I mean, he's saying crazy stuff, and we may be on the verge of psychosis, but we have no evidence that he can't take care of himself. But we certainly have no rants about him being suicidal, and even though he's talked negatively about CBS and Warner Brothers, he hasn't made any threats to harm anyone. So he is not committable, but if you get a guy like this, especially if it's drug-induced, and you can get them into treatment for 72 hours, you give them a strong sedative and have them sleep for 24 hours,
right,
they can wake up as a totally new person. If this is purely drug-induced, then yeah, in 72 hours, you can literally get a person sober, clean, and ready to face the world. Now, not to say there aren't going to be a huge propensity for relapse, because they will be, but 72 hours would do him a world of good right now.
That's why we love having you come on the show. Dr. Dale Archer is here, and you can check out his webpage by going to www.drdalearcher.com. You know, the drug aspect of this, and as you know, besides talking on the radio, I do law enforcement work, and it took 3.5 seconds to look at Charlie Sheen and put that and narcotics together of some speak. But it's interesting to see, and you and I have talked about this on this program before, about the celebrity aspect of this, whether it's Charlie Sheen or whoever, and how they're put on a pedestal, how they're used as a role model. And there are very few that come forward from the media aspect that don't say that, you know, Charlie Sheen's cool, you know, Tiger Blood and Ninja and all this kind of stuff, that actually come forward and say, this guy needs some help. Why do the public, why do young people, whoever, fans, ignore that and just think that this is a great role model for young people, when really he's a hurting man?
Well, he's definitely a hurting man, but on the other hand, why is he so attractive to young people? It's very simple. We're going through very tough economic times right now, and a lot of young folks believe that the American dream or the Canadian dream or the dream of prosperity is no longer viable for them and is no longer attainable, that they've been sold a bill of goods, and that their parents got in there and were greedy and basically ruined it for all the generations going forward. So they're a very cynical lot. And in all of our deep, dark recesses in the corner of our brain, there is the emotional center of the brain, which, when left unchecked, wants to do things that feel good and are fun and screw the consequences. So that's why young folks relate to him, because they're living vicariously through him, because they're saying, who doesn't want to say, screw your boss? Who doesn't want to have two gorgeous women living with you? Who doesn't want to party when they want and sleep when they want and work when they want and be rich and famous and powerful? Go Charlie. So it really is a fantasy, even though most of us are logical enough to say, look, yeah, it reads good, and yeah, maybe I would like to do it, but I'm smart enough to know that I couldn't get away with it. I'd end up in jail. It's not healthy for me. It's not the right thing to do. We have logic that kicks in. But that's why this guy is such a phenomenon. That's why he gets 1.5 million Twitter followers in 4 days.
Yeah.
Is because folks relate to that, especially the younger generations. And as long as Charlie keeps going, he's going to have a following, plain and simple. And even when he gets help, he's going to have a cult status that's going to be hard to ignore, and it's going to make him a marketable guy for any TV show that wants to bring him back. Now, the operative word is, at some point, if he doesn't get help, he's going to self-destruct, and he's going to go from being a guy who has it all, rich, famous, and powerful, to a guy who's, you know, one step above a Skid Row drug addict.
Let's take this now back to Charlie Sheen a few months ago, a year ago, whatever it was, the domestic violence situations, the problem with substance abuse, and if I remember correctly, the rehab that he was allowed to do in his home. What about the system in Charlie Sheen? Joe Schmo on the street, who has a couple of domestic violence charges, has a problem with substance abuse, doesn't usually get to do any court-ordered rehab in his home. Has the system failed him, or is this just a case of Hollywood justice?
It's both. The system has failed, Hollywood justice. This is a rich, famous, powerful guy. We see examples of it every day. Lindsay Lohan, cocaine conviction, spends 84 minutes in jail. Paris Hilton, cocaine conviction, probably would do no jail time. Charlie Sheen is just one more rich, famous guy who is able to game the system. It's really is justice for some. It's not justice for all, and it's an unfortunate scenario, but that's what we're facing here. And Hollywood justice just tacks on top of that in terms of when you are a superstar and when you have the ability to make money for other people, as Charlie clearly does, then you're going to be granted a lot of leeway. And it's not about what's best for Charlie. It's about what's best for the media industrial complex. It's about what's best for the studios. It's about what's best for all of the advertisers who advertise on his shows. So it's a sad state of events where the individual doesn't matter, and it only matters in terms of what he can give to the people that are involved with him, whether that's managers, agents, production companies, studios, advertisers. But in the end, he's a commodity, and he's a very valuable commodity. And so I guarantee you there are folks out there that want him just to get a little bit of help and hope he turns around just enough, and then they'll be using him again.
Yeah, that's just it. Dr. Dale Archer's here. Tell us, what have you been up to? You're a busy guy. You got your own show. You're on all the cable news shows. What's new in the life of Dr. Dale Archer?
Well, I guess the newest thing is I just turned in my book to Random House, and I was only 2 weeks past the deadline. I thought that was pretty good for a serial procrastinator such as myself. But the name of the book is You Are Who You Are, and it's about the personality traits within all of us, some of which, if those traits go to the high end of the continuum, can turn into a psychiatric illness, but all of us have those traits, and I think that that's something the average person doesn't understand, that we all have some propensity, some smaller, some larger than others, for bipolar, ADHD, OCD, a lot of the major psychiatric diagnoses. And so it's basically has some questionnaires in there where each individual can map out their own personality profile, learn what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, and then parlay that hopefully into a more successful life.
When we see the media today, and of course we were nonstop Charlie Sheen for a while, and I think probably one of the most happiest people about that was Muammar Gaddafi, because he got out of the news. Charlie Sheen got in the news, and now we see the poor people in Japan, the disaster that's going on there. I think you said it best. The studios do what's best for them. The networks do what's best for them. Will we see another Charlie Sheen-esque type story? Or will finally the mainstream media, the news, focus on news and leave the Charlie Sheen stories to the entertainment type programs? I'm always shocked to see news channels cut into their or networks cut into their programming to air Lindsay Lohan's next court appearance, because really, who gives a damn?
Well, Dana, though, the thing is that people do give a damn, and that's why the networks do it, because people do care about that. I got to tell you that you look at some of the trending topics, which I do every morning when I wake up and see, okay, what topics are going to be hot today? What do I need to know about? What might I be talking about on TV or the radio or doing a blog on? And a guy like Charlie Sheen was actually rating higher than the Libyan crisis
at
the time that he was at his peak. So that was the number one news story in all of North America at the time. I think that right now, obviously, with the Japanese crisis that's occurred, that's pushed him out of the way. But at some point, folks get tired of watching the disaster footage and worrying about nuclear meltdowns and all of the horrific events that have happened over there. And then Charlie becomes a comic relief, and he bursts on the scene again. And people are ready to embrace that because I don't want to think about Japan. That's too scary. That's too hard. That's too vicious for me to deal with on a day-to-day basis. And so little Charlie pops in, and that is a good thing for a lot of folks. So I'm agreeing with you completely. Our standards are warped in terms of what we consider important and what we want to watch. But I'm a firm believer, though, that the media plays no role in this whatsoever, because I think that if people weren't watching it, they'd be the first to take it off because they're all about ratings, and they're going to put stuff up there that people watch, and people want to watch it. And if you have a network and you don't put it on and somebody else puts it on, then the ratings are going to punish you. So I think that until we as a society learn that we are contributors to this type of behavior because of the fact that we, by watching it, are supporting it, it's not going to go away.
That is so true. His webpage is www.drdalearcher.com. He has the wildly popular Dr. Dale Archer Show, and you can see him on all the cable news shows. Thank you, Doc. It's always a pleasure having you on the program.
Thank you very much, Donna. You have a good one.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Yep, bye.
And that's Dr. Dale Archer talking about Charlie Sheen and all things Sheen-esque. I don't know. Anyway, this is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. And we are winning here. And Charlie Sheen is losing. But anyway, I do have a quick note I want to share with you before we sign off for the night. Comes from Drew Kessie. You know, Drew is looking for answers regarding the disappearance of his daughter, Jennifer. Covered it on the show here many, many times, cable news shows, etc. He sends out a quick note that I will share with the audience on March 17th, which is tomorrow. If you're listening to this live at 1 a.m. on Oprah's own network, there will be a 48 hours hard evidence show, Stolen Beauty, and it's prefaced this way. Tara Grinstead disappeared in 2005. We covered that story here. Police had no leads solving her mysterious disappearance. 3 months later, another woman, Jennifer Kessie, went missing. Police had no hard evidence, but they often wondered if these similar cases were related. So if you're wanting to watch a show, and I encourage you, about the disappearance of Jennifer Kessie and Tara Grinstead, check out the OWN Oprah Winfrey Network, and that comes from Drew Kessie. Anyway, that's it. That's tonight's show. I hope you enjoyed it. Our webpage is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can click on the links to listen to the show live, podcasts of past shows that go back several years, daily commentaries, leave comments, whatever you like. It's always my pleasure serving you, and we'll see you again real soon here on the Dana Pretzer Show.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of ScaredMonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.